Roots Racing Culture is made possible in part by the contributions to PBS Utah from listeners like you. Thank you.
Hey, my friends, you're listening to Roots, Race, and Culture, the podcast from PBS Utah.
If you like what you hear, we hope you'll subscribe, leave us a review, and share with your friends.
All right, now let's get this thing started.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to Roots, Race, and Culture, where we bring you into candid conversations about shared cultural experiences. I'm Daynor Gerald.
And I'm Lonzo Liggins. In 1962, Malcolm X gave a speech in Los Angeles to an audience of mostly African-American women, where he said the following. Who taught you to hate the texture of your hair? Who taught you to hate the color of your skin to such an extent that you bleach it to look like the white man? Who taught you to hate the shape of your nose and the shape of your lips? Who taught you to hate yourself from the top of your head to the soles of your feet? Well, we have two wonderful guests here to discuss these pointed questions. Welcome, ladies.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
Good.
Well, why don't
Thank
you introduce
you for
yourselves?
Joining us. Yes, Tiffany, let's start with you.
Well, I'm Tiffany Rasmussen, and I was born and raised here in Utah. I'm currently a high school teacher and a yoga instructor, and I also do a lot or a bit of modeling.
Jack of all trades.
Yeah,
that's awesome. And we have Dr. Kaur.
Yes.
Dr. Kaur, would you introduce yourself, please?
My name's Harjeet. I was born in Punjab, and I immigrated to West Valley City when I was 3 years old, so I'm a Utahn. I did biomedical engineering and then went to medical school, and now I'm doing my psychiatry residency at the University of Utah, and I identify as a Sikh Punjabi woman.
Awesome. Nice. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Welcome. You were telling us something about your name earlier that has some kind of significance. Can you tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah, my last name's Kaur, so I'm Sikh, and a lot of people know that as Sikh, as people here pronounce it. Mm-hmm. It's a religion where we don't believe in the caste system, and we believe in equality, so you could tell from people's last name what position they were in the caste system, mm-hmm. and people would be treated differently according to that. So our guru, our 10th guru, gave us the last name Kaur for women mm-hmm. and Singh for men, and it's just to symbolize equality and royalty with our last names. So we're
wow.
all equal, and we can be treated that way.
Wow, I love that. I think you have your roots, your race, and your culture all encapsulated in your last name.
Yes,
yeah, that
definitely.
Is so cool. I love that so much.
That's amazing. So first, I'd love to start with you, Tiffany. Mm-hmm. When someone talks about this idea of standards of beauty and equality, what do you think of when you think American standard of beauty?
For a long time, it's been Eurocentric, and it's been other ethnicities trying to mimic the Eurocentric standards of beauty. So typically blonde hair, light eyes, light skin, you know, slender.
Yeah.
So while it's changed, you know, as we see when the Kardashians and J-Lo and more of the round buttocks and stuff, it still, I think, very much upholds the Eurocentric standards of
yeah.
beauty.
Yeah, I find that funny because you know, when I go to the gym or anything, I'll see people on that machine where they're like doing these hip thrusts with all this weight on their hips to try to like grow their buttocks, and I was like, I didn't see that 10 years ago.
What about you, Dr. Kaur? What do you think of when you hear the American standard of beauty?
You know, I agree definitely with what Tiffany just mentioned. I think a lot about how the standards are created by those in power, mm-hmm. and who is in power is a concept that we've been talking about for a long time, and it's usually white, blonde, you know, different colored eyes are really promoted and stuff like that. So that's what I think of when I think of beauty, standards of beauty. Mm-hmm. And I also think of the concept that we have to all mold ourselves to be that way mm-hmm. to get success. And I think that's where a lot of my struggles with the standards of beauty really stand.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about how that impacts a person who doesn't fit in those standards. So do you feel like Utah has the same standard? How does that feel? Because both of you guys have lived here for most of your life.
You're both from here. mostly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there is definitely a standard of beauty here that upholds the Eurocentric, and entwine that with the standard religion here, which is Mormon.
So it's kind of very, you know, sort of whitewashed. And, mm-hmm. and how does that impact you, having grown up here or been here most of your life?
You know, I was lucky to grow up in West Valley, where there's a lot of people of color. But, you know, interestingly, we were influenced there, too. I remember when I was in seventh grade, I used to get gel, and I have pretty straight hair. I've always had pretty straight hair, but even me, I would take gel and make sure every strand was in very straight. Like, I didn't want anything to stray. And I remember thinking and feeling so much pressure every single day to, you know, have super straight hair, be thin. And that was like a huge struggle on my self-esteem. And I felt like nobody really cared to give me a chance to be my friend, or even like boys like wouldn't like me because of the way I looked.
That's interesting. I never really thought about the coarseness or the texture of the hair being something to have like pressure. I mean, your hair is curly. My hair is naturally curly. Like, to feel like you have to straighten it out all the time is tough.
I did. I was a skater in junior high. And back in the late 80s, early, yes, I was a skater. But back in the late 80s, early 90s, the skaters would have this big, like, long hair that they'd have that fall in front of their face. And they would throw it back like that,
the,
you know?
Justin Bieber
yeah,
thing.
Like Justin Bieber thing.
Right.
And I had my afro, and I was like, I can't
flick it, man.
I can't flick my afro. So, yeah, I remember that feeling, that weird sense of not feeling like I belonged with the rest of the skaters.
I know how you feel, Lonzo. I know how you feel.
Yeah, see, and now I don't have any hair, so it's just a total loss.
Wow. So I'm kind of curious about this idea of being here and having to sort of live up to these standards. Did you find that there was some point in your life when you were just willing to just accept you for who you are, or did other people started accepting you for who you are around here?
So, I mean, even just going back to the hair, like, again, growing up here, I tend to be one of the, you know, only black kids that were in school. And even though you mentioned like West Valley, you said a lot, and I'm like, more than other areas, but a lot to other standards outside of Utah is, you know, people are always asked when they come here, like, where are all the black people?
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about? We're here. And it wasn't until I left Utah and flew into New York and I was like, oh, this is what they're talking about. But growing up, like, I would beg my mom to straighten my hair, you know, because I wanted to have straight hair like my friends. I mean, even on TV, you didn't have a lot of ethnic role models. And the 90s was very, for me as a teenager, was heroin chic. So the skinnier, the better, you know.
Oh,
And I would try to, I remember my mom ironing my hair and it just went instead of, you know, straightening it. And it wasn't until I was an adult that I learned, and that's why I try to talk to my students now, because it took becoming an adult to really embrace having curly hair. And, you know, I would hide from the sun, and now I'm like, oh, please, I want to be more, you know, golden. And it really was a lack of representation that made me feel like I had to look like everyone else in my class and stuff like that.
Absolutely. Wow. Now, let's keep it local too, because I want to ask this question for you, Dr. Kaur. In 2007, the Forbes magazine wrote an article calling Utah the vainest city in America due to their ranking of having the second highest number of plastic surgeons per capita. One 2019 American Academy in Facial Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery survey found that 72% of patients doing plastic surgery wanted to look better in selfies on Instagram, Snapchat, and Facebook.
Wow.
The research also showed that social media has led to more body image concerns and eating disorders. Mm-hmm. Now, how do you respond to that, since you're a medical professional and you're a psychiatrist?
That's a very complicated question. So just a couple of layers that I'm thinking about. The first is, when you say, you know, we're kind of the vainest city, I think there's a lot of cultural aspects to that, too, of perfectionism that makes that a little bit more complicated.
Yeah.
I also do believe that, like, standards of beauty, though, impact both men and women. It impacts women more deeply. And I feel like because of that perfectionism, there is an image, there is a beauty standard that is very Eurocentric that a lot of people feel like they have to abide by to get that praise, to get that reward. to get that success. Mm-hmm. As far as social media goes, I think that is a very big conversation about its impact on mental health and also eating disorders. With the rise of social media, we do get this kind of these like dopamine hits of likes and the way our image looks for people and the validation we get through words. And I think there is a certain image, again, Eurocentric, that is praised. And I think it brings a lot of pressure for a lot of people, especially young kids. Mm-hmm. And then eating disorders on their own are interestingly very entrenched in racism. Mm-hmm. Wow. And I would say that with eating disorders, there's a lot of, I always find it interesting how they're on such a high rise in America. Mm-hmm. And I think a big part of that is also the way we look at food, the way we look at beauty standards, the way we look at how we should be. So again, it's a complicated question, but there's a lot of concepts of beauty standards that do come through that.
Well, you know, there's a history of, you know, where these beauty standards arose in America. And, you know, it could go back to the 1920s or 30s, but really when media started to launch, when you started to see more advertisements in magazines and in television and in movies, was right around the 1950s and 60s. And two of those major stars at the time, it was Marilyn Monroe for the white community, pretty much the world itself. And then you had Lena Horne, who was a representation of women, black women and women of color. And these were the standards of beauty that most women were trying to adhere to. Of course, you know, as we moved into the 1960s and 70s, it got a little bit more, as you were talking about, the heroin chic, primarily with Twiggy. We had Twiggy, and then who else did we have?
Pam Grier.
Yes. Twiggy was the representation of white women in America, and Pam Grier was black women in America. And of course, you moved to more natural with Pam Grier, where the Afro was embraced, and then with Twiggy, it was just more of this, the skinnier you look, the prettier you were, and that carried, of course, into the 80s and then to the 90s. And
well, I think it's fascinating looking at those images in black and white, how similar they look, right?
Right.
Like, you can't, like, between Marilyn Monroe and Lena Horne, like, there was very little difference in the shade of their skin. And then she had straight hair, right? Lena Horne did. I don't know if that's her natural hair. I doubt it. Yeah. So you see that they were already starting to push that idea of, like, you have to look like this to be beautiful, no matter who you are, right?
Well, and then I asked my daughters, I was like, who is your representation of a standard of beauty today? Like, who would you, just throw some names at me just right off the top. And the first, like, without hesitation, Kylie Jenner, Kim Kardashian, you know?
What?
Yeah, that were those were the two people that they immediately thought of. And I said, well, is there anyone else? And they said Sydney Sweeney on Euphoria, and then Beyonce and... who else? Who was the other gal? Rihanna.
Well, yeah. And again, I look at that image of, you know, Jenner and I can't tell the difference. Like, I would have literally thought those were the same woman. Like, there's this homogenized sort of idea of what beauty is even today.
What do you think about that today? Do you think about those images? Sad. Is that accurate or sad?
Yeah, I mean, but it is really sad because, again, growing up, I was often teased about having big lips, and mm-hmm. now women are getting injections in their lips to have full lips. And
other parts of their body, too.
Right, yeah. Going back to the rear end, you know, like, it can almost be dangerous to try to fit this idealism of beauty. To me, it is sad.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think about the women today? I mean, do you think it's like, if you were to think of someone that you thought of as a standard of beauty today?
Right. I would agree with your daughters. Like, mm-hmm. this is what I would see. And I do want to make a point. As a non-black person of color, mm-hmm. I also realize my privilege in the system. Mm-hmm. I think I'm grateful that I'm here a part of this conversation, but mm-hmm. even Kylie and Kim, they profit off of appearing as black or whatever mm-hmm. is quote unquote black features. Mm-hmm. And I think they profited a lot off of that. Mm-hmm. And they could only do that because they were white women. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important thing to say.
Wow.
Because I really believe that they did have that privilege and that status that a lot of black women didn't have. Mm-hmm. And then they then would profit off of these things that were traditionally features of black women.
So you're saying, like, if you're black and you look this way, it's like, eh. But if you're white and you look that way, it's like, ooh. So there's like this different standard between the two?
I would agree. I don't know. What do you think,
yeah,
Tiffany?
Most definitely. I mean, even when they were rocking cornrows, even though they called them boxer braids, you know, for me to wear something like that or another black woman would be considered ghetto or hood. Yeah. I mean, just think of the fact that, and I don't even think we have it here in Utah, but we had to get the Crown Act passed just so we could wear our natural hair to work.
I haven't heard of this one.
The Crown Act is so you cannot be discriminated for your hair if you have locks, if you wear braids, you know, an afro. So in a lot of states, they've started passing the Crown Act because, again, to protect people of color to be able to have their natural hair and not be called unprofessional and things like that.
I don't have any hair, so.
Wow.
I never studied hair-related stuff.
Well, but you know what, though? Let's go back to the 90s when Michael Jordan was kind of like the essence of what was like masculine or attractive. No. Everybody started shaving their head because he was bald, right? And so there's a similar thing here. And now longer hair like mine is coming back into style, you know, 20 or 30 years later. Mm-hmm. So it's funny how the images of the people that we look up to kind of represent what we think is the standard, right?
Well, I grew up here in Utah. I grew up in Sugar House. And when I viewed women from my young age, the standard of beauty that I had seen and that what I was used to was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed woman. And that's exactly what I thought was beauty from the time I was young. And I didn't really have, you know, a context outside of it because that was what was seen as magnificent here and what was held up. Those were the women that got a lot of stuff here. They got more. It seemed to be that just more doors opened for them, and it seemed like there was a better life for them than it was for other women. And it wasn't just like women of color. It was like women who were, you know,
brunette. Blondes have more fun, right?
Yeah. There was just, it just seemed like there was a bit of an advantage for them. Can you speak on that? Is there an advantage to beauty in this society?
Oh, 100%. Even as someone who, I remember, I think a lot about beauty standards when I started engineering, right? Mm-hmm. And even in those spaces, you know, where you think like, you know, science is the main thing, even there, beauty standards mattered. Mm-hmm. It mattered how you looked, how you presented yourself. You got opportunities that way.
Wow.
In medical school.
Wow.
Even as a psychiatrist, I think barely am I fighting those beauty standards. And I'm like, no, I'm going to show up in an office being exactly who I am, because that's how patients are going to relate to me. But definitely people do, there is a thing called pretty privilege, but where does that pretty privilege come from? It comes from, again, people in power, people with these Eurocentric beauty looks that kind of get that privilege. Mm-hmm. So I say pretty privilege is just in another way saying like Eurocentric privilege, right? Mm-hmm. And people do get opportunities if they appear a certain way. So it's no surprise that a lot of women of color feel like they have to, women of color, people who are, say, bigger, feel like they have to look a certain way so they get those opportunities. It's no surprise.
Yeah, what do you think?
Most definitely, and especially in the modeling scene, I've seen that a lot, where still today the blonde hair is idolized, and they are used a lot more for brands. Mm-hmm. They book a lot more. They can charge a lot more. And it's sad.
Yeah.
It's frustrating. But even so, I was involved in an event in the spring, and even like the hairdressers and the makeup artists, they're not prepared to work with different color, you know, skin tones and everything. And a lot of even the darker skinned girls were really upset and in tears because they couldn't match their skin tones. They were very gray and looked ashy, and they had to go to their car and try to fix their makeup themselves. And it's like, how are we in 2023 and makeup artists and hairdressers cannot work with a diverse group of people?
That happened to me once. I did a commercial and that makeup artist finished and I walked in the mirror and I looked like a zombie. I
was right.
Are we gonna? And I literally sat on set. I was like, "Are we gonna shoot it with me looking like this?"
Yeah.
And nobody said anything. I'm like, "Okay."
Yeah. But us speaking up about it, as a black woman, though, us if we speak up about it, then we're seen as problematic.
Yeah. Right.
So, and I chose to be that one, to be problematic, because to see my sisters so upset, I was not gonna stand for it. So.
Good for you.
Well, you know, around the world, people have a different idea of beauty.
Right.
And of course, in America, we have our ideas of what beauty are, but in other places, they have a different idea. So let's take a look at some of the images of people from around the world of how they view beauty. First up, we have Frida Kahlo, who represents sort of the Central American look. She had went on this tangent of being more natural, so she grew her hair, she grew her unibrow, and she was grew out her facial hair because that was kind of a standard of beauty at the time in Central America, but it was frowned upon around the world, but she decided to paint portraits of herself and women who looked like they did in Central America. It's the Wudabi tribe in Niger, where they actually dress up as women to court other women, and they are viewed, it's a matriarchal society, and the men are there to be chosen, not to choose. It's the Kayan Lawi tribe in Myanmar, where they use rings around their neck as a sign of beauty. The more rings you have, the more beautiful you are, and at a young age, they start with rings, and they start to build up those rings, and as you can see, the older they are, the more they have.
I thought that was only in Africa that they did that.
Yeah, they do that in Myanmar as well. This is the Maori women in New Zealand, where a sign of beauty is the tattoo that's on their chin. The more intricate the tattoo is, the higher their place is in that society, and the more beautiful they're considered. So it actually will explain their ranking.
Well, and I feel that's interesting, because I feel like tattoos have made a really big comeback in the last few years. Mm-hmm. And to kind of play the devil's advocate, what I see a lot of times in the gym and when I'm, you know, hanging out, I see people who are trying to sort of like shy away from their Eurocentricity. Like, I feel like tattoos is another way of saying, hey, I'm not just a regular Chad, right? Mm-hmm. Or again, the women working out to try to enhance their buttocks and look more like full and curvy and muscular versus the skinny thing. And I sort of feel like there's a stigma that goes with that American standard of beauty that has kind of been put on it, and people are now trying to somewhat avoid it. Do you guys feel like that's happening or no?
So I think, again, a little bit more, when I think about this concept, I think there were people who spoke out, who fought for their the way they looked, the way they acted. And then there were other people who profited off of it, and then it was, again, promoted. So yeah, I do feel people, I do see sometimes, like, you know, a lot of my friends that are white, they'll be like, oh, I wish I was more tan, or I wish I had curly hair. And though that's really kind that they, you know, are appreciating that, the comeback came when someone fought for it, but then someone else profited from it.
Mm.
So I think that that's something we have to acknowledge and recognize. And I hope that we all, in the end, would be really happy to be whoever we are.
We'll get back to this conversation on Roots, Race, and Culture in just a moment.
PBS Utah is also home to other dynamic podcasts. More Than Half covers some of the most challenging issues facing women in Utah and how it takes all of us to make change happen. Here's a clip from the episode, A Separate Space.
I don't think a lot of people realize that it's just not common for people of color, especially women of color, to see themselves in the stories that, you know, we're reading.
Subscribe to More Than Half wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, back to Roots, Race, and Culture from PBS Utah.
So, welcome back. We're here with Dr. Harjeet Kaur.
Yes.
Royalty.
Thank you.
And, of course, Tiffany Rasmussen, model, educator, yoga instructor, all-around amazing person.
Oh, thank you.
Tell us, you were mentioning about how this sort of idea that generations are starting to take the standards in different directions. Right. How do you explain that?
Well, like most generations who want to do something different than their parents, right? Mm-hmm. You'll see, like with social media, a lot of people are starting, or the younger generations are moving away from this ideology of perfectionism. Mm-hmm. They're using less filters. Their pictures, if they post pictures, because that's kind of the thing to not post pictures, but they'll do like blurred pictures or just where they're not at, they don't uphold that ideology of perfection. So not
posting pictures, you're saying like video instead of pictures? Like what's
they're just like not really posting at all. Like they just, yeah.
Wow.
For like even my son, he's started to get a bit into modeling, and someone asked him, well, can you post more pictures so we see more? But that's not their thing. They'll have like maybe two photo dumps, you know?
Wow.
Just of their life, what's going on.
Yeah.
I think that's really brave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I hope that the direction goes in that way. I feel like there's a lot of conversation around race, around culture, and I think there are a lot of courageous younger kids.
Mm-hmm.
But the difficulty comes when they have to find jobs and, make a living. And I think that's where a lot of times we learn to dim ourselves as we grow.
Yeah. Mm. Speaking of that, though, just my son went to go for an interview, and he's like, does this look okay, Mom? And he had on, like, jeans and just a T-shirt. And I was like, no, you need to wear something. You know, at least put on a polo and, like, some khakis or something. And he's like, no, this is okay. Mm. He did, listen a little bit and put on the polo, but still jeans. And he did okay. But, like, even those standards of making sure, because I would think that you do, like, a suit and tie and things like that. But kind of moving away from that.
Did he get the job?
Yes, he did.
I was thinking about, we were talking about, different types of body types, like with Kylie Jenner and Kim Kardashian, how, and J-Lo, how they're a little bit, their butts are a little bit bigger. And, and I think people nowadays seem to be more accepting of body types that are a little bit bigger. Do you think that's the case, or do you think that they're still kind of putting people in a box if they're body type is not twiggy, so to speak?
Well, Lizzo definitely was like trying to come out and say, hey, yo, look, you gotta accept me as I am, so.
Do they though? That's the question.
Do they? Lizzo, because she's under fire right now for actually fat shaming and stuff, so with her dancers, it's kind of it's sad to see, because I think a lot of people looked up to her and her being able to express herself, and then to hear that she's like fat shaming behind closed doors, it's disappointing. But
that is disappointing.
Yeah.
I just wonder if we'll ever get to a place where we will just accept beauty for what it is, and just say, because I mean, beauty is such a
subjective.
It's a subjective thing where, you look at someone and say, oh, well, she's beautiful or he's beautiful, and you're not, I mean, it's what you think. And I feel like people skew that version, because you might look at someone and say, oh, they're good looking, but then someone goes, I don't think so. And then you start to go, well, maybe they're not. Do you think that we'll ever get to a place where we'll just totally accept beauty for what it is? Or do you think that we're always going to be put in this box because of the images that we're exposed to?
Dr. Cor.
Yeah, I think like with even the body shapes and sizes, I think the thing is, once it was seen more in the media, it was accepted a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But again, everything comes with a price. I think that, yes, I hope one day that we can just accept people the way they are and how they look. But with the way we view people, there's a lot of history. There's a lot of reasons for certain images or certain beauty standards to be upheld. And a lot of them is what we profit off of, sadly.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just thinking that hopefully one day that will be what happens. I know that a lot of people these days, they're trying to be like good parents and saying you're beautiful no matter what, how you look, but we can only shield and protect our children so much.
Well, I know there was a big push with plus size models for a while. You're starting to see them in different catalogs more often and that sort of thing. And I think that's great. I even see some like athletic brands are advertising, and you'll see the person working out in their clothes, and it's not like some really super fit or thin person.
Right.
It's and I've always kind of felt like, well, it's really about being healthy more than necessarily like what looks good or what looks like the standard of beauty is being good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can tell a healthy person, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they look like the standard.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. So do you guys feel like the focus shouldn't be on what is considered beautiful, or should it be on like something else? Like how do we get ourselves to that place mm-hmm. where we can accept each other and be excited about the differences versus like trying to homogenize what we consider to be this is good?
Yeah, I think diversity is beautiful. Right. And I think that we are moving towards, you know, something that people are starting to understand. Skinny doesn't equal healthy, you know, but also not to glorify, you know, just a certain body type, to accept people as they are.
There's like a lot of research that also shows that BMIs don't correlate to somebody's health. You can have a skinny person who gets a heart attack.
The BMI is racist itself.
It is. It has a racist history. Yeah. That's a whole other conversation.
Well, to have that conversation, BMI, body mass index, is where does that come from?
Like, it doesn't take in the, you know, people's genetic makeup, you know, like one of my sons was also like, he was considered overweight, but if you looked at him, you would see his calves were just like, you know, muscular. He was just a bigger kid, but he wasn't overweight. And so it doesn't take in, like, you're going to see that Polynesians have a different body type than a lot of Caucasians, but the BMI caters to the Caucasians. So
wow, so that is like the BMI is actually like, again, upholding the traditional standards of beauty.
Because it was, the research was only done in a place with a certain homogenous population when it was first created. So it's not created for everybody, but they utilize it for everybody. It was, I think, some Eastern European country that it was created in. Also, the person who created the BMI had his own racist history of in eugenics. Also, I actually talk about this a little bit more in my podcast, Bundle of Hers. We did a whole episode on the racist history of BMI. But I think that that's another thing we have to remember. Where is this research being done, even when it comes to how skinny you are?
Well, you know, that brings up something that kind of goes back to back in the days when film was what we used. Now everything is shot with digital ones and zeros, right? But they used to be on film. And when Kodak and these original companies started creating film stock and photography, they were just using certain models, right? These white women. And so they were trying to get the emulsion and the makeup of the chemistry of this film to make that person look good. Right. And so it was all about white people. So when you would have a person of color on the screen or you would film them, the lighting just didn't look as good. It didn't feel right. And they didn't actually change this film stock to make it work for people of color until a furniture company said, hey, listen, we're taking these pictures and it doesn't look good, because the furniture was, you know, kind of brown. It was more like a person of color skin tone. So then they went in and changed the film stock to make the furniture look good. And that's when they finally were able to start to shoot film and light so that people of color looked more natural.
That's wild.
Yeah. That's interesting.
That's wild that it was through the furniture being sold that that they had
that
to do that.
That was the important thing.
That was the important thing.
So what do we do going forward? I mean, how do we change as a society, do you think, to you know, make it so that our standards of beauty can kind of not be taken as seriously, I guess?
I think the answer for a lot of hopeful change or positive change in any of these topics, even beauty standards, is a lot of acceptance of who you are and your identities. So I think it's important that we tell stories about ourselves. It's important that we listen to stories about ourselves and start loving who we are as people. I think that really allow us to start accepting who we are, how we look, and then moving forward in a positive way. At least that's how I think my equity work is impactful, is I'm fully who I am. I show up authentically, and hopefully like that inspires other people to also be who they are, tell their stories, so that we could move in a forward positive direction.
So by telling the stories, do you mean like we have to have more media that has like people of color as central characters, or we talk about our history in a way to bring it up in a positive light? Like, what kind of things What does it really mean, like, to a regular person on an everyday basis to participate, to tell their story so that people can appreciate who they are? And
you know, it's every interaction. Like, I saw my mom and dad this morning. I would talk to them about what's going on in the world or how I feel about some certain things. Or like, I wish you didn't do this when I was younger. Mm. It will be like, again, I have a podcast, so I talk there. Yeah. It's with my patients. It's with my educators. It's everybody you interact with. I think we often think of impactful big change as a public thing, which I think things like this is very important, but it's even in the daily interactions. Mm-hmm. It's in the way I say to my sister, you look beautiful with your curly hair. Mm-hmm. It's in like conversations with my niece that, oh, I love your cheeks. They're so cute. And they're like chubby cheeks, you know?
Nice.
Mm-hmm. So it's like the small little things I think that are really radical. Yeah. Like, we don't need to make these big gestures. Yeah. I think like media shows, podcasts, like things like this is very, very important work, but it's also just the small little things.
Tiffany, how do you feel about this?
I agree with a lot of what she said. And for me, I think representation is a big thing, you know, and I think, again, as an educator, I'm in a district that has the most, one of the largest diversity groups of students, and I am the only Black history teacher.
And I assume your students look to you as a mentor or as, you know, maybe somebody who can help them understand mm-hmm. how to accept themselves or what they're dealing with in this unique Utah culture, especially right. the Black students and that yeah. sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Without disclosing any names or anything, like, do you have any personal stories that really show the impact that you were able to help somebody see and accept themselves or anything like that?
I mean, there's quite a few, you know, with, and that's kind of a loaded question, I guess you could say, because, I mean, I just recently had a group of students come and tell me how they don't feel represented and how they, you know, if you look at the cheerleading team, there's not girls of color on the cheerleading team. And so they feel like they're not represented or a part of the school culture. Mm. And, you know, how even the Black boys, because they were Black girls, still are teasing them and calling them, you know, names. And because, and I think it's more they want to fit in with the rest of the boys. And so they don't feel beautiful. And they don't feel represented. And wow. it's very discouraging. I actually went home and cried to see that, to know that they're still dealing with that today, some of the same issues and things that I was dealing with as a child. So
really, it's up to that school to tell some stories, to enlighten people, to give them a space of their own. I mean, maybe they need to create a step club or something
right.
and get out on there, yes. on that field and be like, let us show you. How it's done.
I wanted to mention something real quick here, because you mentioned it's how we, you know, it's how we talk to ourselves and how we view ourselves. It's important when it comes to beauty. You know, Dana and I have been in the entertainment industry for a long time. We know we've been around a lot of models. You know, we've done modeling ourselves. And I think when people think about beauty, they think of it as the answer. They think mm-hmm. if I can look this way, doors will swing open.
Mm, right.
You know, if I'm better looking, if my body's better, so forth, and I'm going to feel
right?
so much better. But in a lot of times, and we can tell you from our own experience, there's a lot more that goes on under, you know, behind the scenes of people who look like that. There's a lot of insecurity.
Definitely.
There's a lot of fear of losing that because it mm-hmm. becomes so wrapped up into your identity. There's a huge, you know, thought that I'm not good enough, or this person is better. There's always this person is a little bit better, or maybe, you know, you get so obsessed with your looks to the point to where it almost becomes a crippling thing,
yeah,
and it doesn't become an advantage. Yeah, so I think that's really an uglier side to, you know, people chasing after this beauty with
right.
Social media and things like that. I think that's just something I just had to throw out there, because a lot of times young people really get obsessed with that, and we all do to an
right,
extent, right.
right?
Oh, definitely. I think when we think about, when I say, like, there's a lot to say about having conversations with yourself, it is a huge confidence thing. And I think confidence is internal. That's why they always say people who are confident get opportunities, even if they look however they do, or they appear more beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a, I agree with that. Like, I agree with everything you've said, because it's really about building self-esteem. Like, when we think of mental health crises, what is the core issue? A lot of it is loss of self-love. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? And wow. So it's really building that confidence, that love for yourself. But it's hard when there's so much noise in the world.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. If I can share my personal experience with getting into modeling, again, growing up here, not feeling very beautiful, but looking at the little catalogs that would come on Sunday in the newspaper and wanting to be one of those, you know, girls or women. Mm. And then as I got older, I struggled with my weight and went through an eating disorder for a while and got really skinny. And then it's the people like, oh my gosh, you look so good, even though I was not healthy, you know, saying things like that. And then after having the kids and having weight on me, I would have people like, oh, I'm a photographer. Would you like to be my, and I tell them, oh, after I drop these 10 pounds or after I do this. And it wasn't until I was diagnosed with lupus and my hair started falling out that I was like, I'm never going to do it if I don't just go out and do it. So even when I was like having episodes and, you know, my would have a bald spot or stuff, I would make myself still go and do it. Even if I had to take prednisone and put on an extra 15 pounds from the steroids, I would still make myself show up for those shoots, because, again, representation matters. And I was like, it's more than me. You know.
Wow. There. Wow. That's the real stuff there. We're just about out of time. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Thank you. That's a very intense,
personal, meaningful thing. A lot of women and younger generational people can learn from that experience to believe in themselves and to not be afraid of the challenges that they're facing, whether it be physical, emotional, and to show up.
Yeah.
Showing up is half the battle,
right?
Yep. Right.
Right.
And but I do want to finish off with your earrings.
I'm so happy you noticed.
Oh yeah, tell us about them.
The reason I'm happy you noticed is because I'm Punjabi, and these earrings are Punjabi. And I think when I came here today, I was like, standards of beauty. I need to always represent who I am, where I come from, because they make me really proud. So yeah, they're from my hometown.
Pull your hair back so we can see these things. These are beautiful.
They're called jhumke. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, is it a tree? Tell me about it. Tell us the...
Actually, a lot of the type of details are mimicked from like nature. So trees, leaves. So the top part is like a leaf petal.
Yeah.
Because we do a lot of farming where I'm from. So there's a lot of like natural influences.
I love it. They're beautiful.
Now, I know some of you who are listening right now can't see these earrings, which gives you an even better reason to watch the show.
Yes.
So where can people hear more about the Bundle of Hers podcast?
Yeah, so we're with the University of Utah Scope Radio, which is a healthcare, which is like the University of Utah healthcare space. Mm-hmm. And you can also find us at Bundle of Hers. Where five women who are residents, medical students, it changes through the years. We started with four women who were all medical students. And we just talk about being women of color in medicine and uplifting underrepresented stories, similar to what you all are doing.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great. And if people want to know more about your modeling career, do you want people to follow you, or where can people go?
Yeah, so I'm going to refer my yoga account at That Yogi Chick on Instagram. So.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. How do you spell it?
That Yogi, and then Yogi Chick, Chick.
Perfect.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, that does it for our podcast version of this show. We thank you guys for joining us. It's been really exciting. Thank you to our lovely guests.
And yeah, this has been a good time. Hey, Roots, Race, and Culture, y'all, we are out. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Roots, Race, and Culture.
Check out our website for more content, information about our guests, and other episodes. You can find all that in a bag of chips at pbsutah.org/roots.
And you'd be doing us a solid if you told all your friends about our show. But until next time, y'all, we are out. Yes.